Alex is here to talk about SCAPI, which is a great acronym, by the way. Thanks. Go right ahead. We'll go a little bit later, a few minutes later, so that you have all the time there.
Okay. Yeah, hi everyone. So I'm Alex. I'm here to talk about SCAPI TLS, which is basically a scriptable TLS stack. And I'll try and keep it in the context of TLS 1.3 and, you know, how you can go about testing TLS 1.3 using this. So, you know, I'll also talk about why would you ever want to build a scriptable TLS stack, and it's probably not interesting to 99.99% of the world, except for people who want to pen test TLS. So I'll talk about why we want to do it. So basically, you know, roughly the TLS attack timelines until now. And the big problem, which was in reproducing the current attacks which were there, so either for response or QA or whatever. The goals of SCAPI SSL TLS, I'll do a really quick demo of what it looks like, not too much code, otherwise it's really boring. And I'll have a quick talk about, you know, what to look for in custom TLS stacks, and basically what TLS 1.3 killed in all the pen testing stuff you could find on old stacks. So, you know, as everyone knows here, you know, TLS is the critical protocol to the internet with very, very few alternatives, right? And we need it to have very strong security guarantees because it's pretty much the session layer used for many other protocols or used to derive keys for other protocols. And the thing is, it's that it's very complex. So, you know, in the earlier talks, you know, they were saying that you need 3 weeks to implement a TLS stack. The thing is, until I implemented all the various portions of TLS, 1.0, 1.1, 1.2, 1.3, you realize how complex it is, how many moving parts they are, and how difficult it is to get it right. And the thing is, you know, as a scriptable TLS stack, you know, used for offense, I don't even have to bother with all the proper checks you need to do. So I don't check certificate signatures, all this stuff, which is, you know, the hardest portion. So, you know, why we got to this is that luckily this stuff, all this is under scrutiny, right? So there's been a lot of work and a lot of people that are getting work to TLS and breaking it and looking at it. You know, and there's been a huge growth in the, you know, the number of protocol level attacks and implementation bugs in TLS. It's gone a bit down now, but I guess it's because everyone's working on 1.3, basically. So this was a slide I put together a couple of years back, maybe last year, to show basically the growth. I'm not considering implementation bugs, but only protocol level bugs, which were happening, and, you know, try to keep track of them. So I didn't consider before 2009 because, I didn't have any data for that. So, you know, you can see that all this stuff basically is accelerating. You're getting more and more fines. And generally, the fines are getting quicker and quicker. And the problem is, or the good thing is that the complexity of it really rises. So it's getting more and more difficult to do POCs, to exploit them, and to know if it actually affects you and how much. And so, you know, you've got two main classes of these attacks, which is at the protocol layer, is I try and attack the handshake, make it do stuff so that I get an advantage in the negotiation of keys or stuff like this as an attacker. And, you know, there's at the crypto level. So, like, what can I do to the crypto level once the handshake has gone through? You know, what can I do to the ciphers, basically, to, again, get an advantage as an attacker? So, you know, having a scriptable TLS stack, we wanted to have both these things possibly covered, being able to touch the handshake, but also having all the crypto stuff calculated for you and that you can touch it and modify it on the fly, basically, not having to deal with all this complexity. So around reproducing attacks, the thing is, you know, this stuff comes in and, like, you've got a response team generally which, you know, starts to freak out to know if it's, you know, affecting their product or not. And in order to know that, you basically have to understand the attack properly. And, you know, that seems quite easy, but the thing is, it even when you're well-versed into the TLS ecosystem and all this, it will take you a couple of hours at least to know what's happening. And you have to figure out the practical impact to your product as opposed to, you know, just theoretical issues, because you have to give an answer and that has to translate into a patch eventually. So the other problems you have is also around reproducibility. So, you know, this is a problem. You've got a protocol level issue or an implementation level issue which could or could not affect your stack because it's custom or not. And basically you need to reproduce this. And so I don't know if any of you guys have ever tried to reproduce what comes out in papers, but it generally means patching open SSL, patching some stuff, running it through some Python code, having a wrapper around it. I mean, it's quite complicated, and it works, you know, yeah, you have to get it exactly right. And so basically we thought about, you know, making this a bit simpler, and with the added properties that you could actually have something which you could give to a dev or to a QA that he could run and know whether it's affected or not, right? And the good thing about that is that you actually get regression testing for free, meaning that you can plug this in into your integration test case and hope that, you know, no bugs are introduced in your code which will reintroduce the vulnerability. So again, you know, same thing for response. You know, your response team has to look at all this stuff and provide a definite answer. And, you know, customers generally ask you very, very quickly to give an answer, and so you have to act fast. So, you know, in this thing, you've again got, you know, crypto code review. So if you're on the security team, basically, you're not the guy who's written the code generally. So it can be hard, you know, to get a comparison point or, you know, to get the full picture in, you know, when you're in, like, deep into a crypto routine which has 25 levels and direction and asynchronous callbacks or whatever. And then, you know, POC, basically, you know, the lack of tooling, which I talked about. There's a ton of, well, there's some SSL libs out there, you know, which do a very good job, but basically you need different properties for an offensive tool set, basically, than, you know, obviously a dev-ready lib. Because, you know, for a regular lib, you want to obviously validate certificates, make sure that, you know, your inputs are correct, that all this kind of stuff, which basically breaks the work you do for offensive work. Because everything you want to do is basically provide invalid inputs or things like this. So this is how SCAPI SSL TLS was born, basically. So what it is, it's a TLS and DTLS scriptable stack built above SCAPI. So SCAPI is basically this tool which was written by some guys 10 years back, maybe. And what it does is allows you to model a protocol, right? So you describe, you know, what a packet looks like, and it allows you to interact with it through Python. So the idea is that when you can do that, then you can start getting access to fields which you wouldn't have access to in a standard lib. So you can, for example, get access to, I don't know, a session ID, a key share. You can create a key share. You can do all these kind of things. So we worked hard also to make it stateless, which seems quite weird for TLS because there's so much state. The thing is, again, you want to be able to not depend on the state, basically, of a given lib. So you want to be able to send packets completely out of sync, which have no meaning whatsoever to the state machine, right? It also does, you know, a bunch of packet crafting and dissecting, which is what I was saying, is that given some bytes on the wire, it will spit out a representation of them, which you can touch, modify, act upon for the next packet, basically. And it does the crypto session handling for you, meaning that, you know, when you're going to send a packet which is meant to be encrypted, if you want to, then it will do that transparently for you, and you don't have to bother about, you know, deriving all the keys and doing all the bother. The other thing is it's capable, too, of spitting out all the keys that you've seen during a session, which are quite a lot for TLS 1.3, right? You've got a ton of keys which are generated, and this guy can spit out basically the whole state of your current session, which is kind of useful for troubleshooting stuff. And it can do a bunch of sniffing, wire PCAP stuff, but not that much. So again, you know, why bother? Because this is very, very seldom useful to anyone. But the thing is that if you want to test TLS stacks more easily, at least, this definitely helps. And, you know, luckily out there, most of the TLS stacks are built to be robust, to work well, and, you know, well, to work for you. And we wanted to do the exact opposite of that. So, you know, the general goals, I won't go over all this, but basically it's just that it's easy to use. So again, easy to use means that it's easy to use when you know TLS. If you don't have a clue of what TLS is, it's still going to be super hard to use, right? So you have to know what a record is, what a handshake is, what all the various parts of the protocol are, where the crypto blobs go and all this stuff. And it allows full control of any TLS field. So this is pretty much the interesting portion, meaning you can, you know, modify, say, the finish hash, which is the transaction of the whole thing. You can modify that. You can modify pretty much anything. So what it looks like, it's pretty much a shell you just drop in, and then you can interact with a TLS stack just by typing a bunch of commands, you know, and crafting packets. All classes start with TLS, so it makes it easy to autocomplete. And then you build packets SCAPI style. So what you see at the bottom basically is a very basic client hello, which tries to have a bunch of sane defaults with a division operator, meaning that put those bytes on top of the other one. And that calculates all the length automatically and all this kind of things. For the record, it does pretty much anything TLS 1.0 up to 1.3 on draft 18. So there's some stuff which I haven't had the time to implement on top of this, but most of it works. It can speak with NSS, with the various large libs which do this. So I can't run code on this thing, so I'll just show a quick slide. I don't know if you can see anything, but this basically here is a TLS 1.3 client. So you see how little code there is to it, in a sense. But what it lets you do, though, here, is that even in this small snippet of code, you've got access to all the state machine, all the crypto keys, and every single field within the TLS transaction. Meaning that once you're at this state and sending data, you can actually modify the padding for TLS 1.2 or for CBC mode ciphers in TLS 1.2 and prior. You can modify the padding, you can modify the MAC, the length. You can change all these things transparently based on pre-calculated data, so you don't have to do all the heavy lifting on this stuff. So in a sense, it makes, you know, stuff like Poodle trivial to reproduce and all these kind of things. So for example, when, you know, there was this ticket bleed thing, which was just like a, you know, memory disclosure basically for session tickets disclosed by Cloudflare, it took us like an hour or so to script it and know that, you know, what we needed to do about it or not. So viewing a packet, again, I don't know if this is too small, but here you've got a bunch of key value pairs, basically, which are neatly, you know, ordered. So basically in blue, you've got the keys, and in purple, the values. So meaning you can index anything which is blue and modify its value or retrieve the value, right? So this is what a TLS 1.3 initial packet looks like without a key share. So it will trigger some additional round trip, and you shouldn't do this, but this is what it looks like, right? Eventually, you'd have another extension here, which, you know, specifies which curves you're working on, which things you want to use, and etc. Right? So all this is supported. You can add this, and it just works. So the thing to remember is that, again, you know, anything here is modifiable. So you can modify the compression routines. You can, you know, change and use unspecified things, as well as all the lengths, which sometimes yields interesting results for extensions. I just wanted to show here a bit more complex example of a TLS 1.3 server. So this guy will actually work with a TLS 1.3 client. And so again, you know, in here, you see how this is modeled, right, against people which are familiar with TLS. We'll see how it's modeled against the protocol. And basically, again, here you can change pretty much anything. So, for example, you could load a certificate. If you want to do fuzzing of certificates, which is probably not the best way to do this way, but you could load a cert, modify on the fly, recalculate its signature, and then spit it out to your client, and change this at each request, for example. You know, you can change the algorithms for signatures and change the signatures and all this kind of stuff. Right. So I just wanted to have a quick talk about what I've used this, you know, what to look for basically in previous stacks, and how TLS 1.3 has killed most of the attack surface that there used to be. And just, you know, a separate word on TLS 1.3, it's pretty amazing. To implement, it's very nice, and, you know, there's a lot of properties which have been thought about which are amazingly solid and make you feel pretty good about the protocol. So one thing when working with, you know, custom stacks is that generally they've been forked off something. And one thing which is kind of interesting is to figure out when they've been forked off and at what stage, which, you know, helps you find eventual vulnerabilities which haven't been fixed or haven't been looked at. The thing is, you can do a bunch of recon and identify what stack is being used through, you know, some kind of fingerprinting. So, you know, the stacks react differently to different events. So like OpenSSL will insert an empty plaintext fragment at the beginning of sending data. GSSE and NSS have a stacked handshake, meaning they'll stack handshakes inside a record. And generally, in alert type processing, those libs vary widely. So the handling of alerts is super different depending on which lib you're looking at, which you know can help determine which stack you're speaking to. Now, there's probably need more work which could be done on this field, you know, to make it more automatic and more pretty. So then you can obviously want to go after the state machine, which is pretty tricky. Basically, you have to know the RFC and just go by hint, and it's pretty tedious and boring work. So there's these guys from INRIA who wrote MyTLS, which is a flex TLS, which is a proofed implementation of TLS, which basically has some automated testing of the state machine, which is a good starting point for further testing around. And so SCAPI SL TLS also, we tried to model a state machine outside of the main code, which you can use, and which allows you to fuzz transitions between the states. So to some extent, if you're ready to write code, you can fuzz transitions and try completely random transitions inside the state machine to know if that yields anything. Not a ton of stuff about Diffie-Hellman and ECDH. So again, most of the attacks here have been killed by TLS 1.3. Just to mention that SCAPI SLTS uses a lib called TinyEC in the back end, which allows you to perform calculations which are off curve, or which you can do elliptic curve arithmetics on pretty much any curve you want. So it's helpful to some state. So again, side channels on RSA. So again, TLS 1.3 killed this because there's no more key exchange, RSA key exchange. You know, but before you could use RSA for key exchange, meaning you had a shared secret, a secret generated by the server, which was encrypted by the client, basically, and sent to the server, which was decrypted and then used as a base to derive crypto material. The thing is, it uses PKCS 1 v1.5 at that time, which exposed, you know, potential Blankenbar attacks and all this kind of stuff. So SCAPI SLTS allows you to test for this stuff, and I had a look at this in a couple of stacks, which is quite difficult to do in practice. You know. And then, you know, just the usual side channels and ciphers, you know, CBC ciphers and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, Poodle kind of things. All this stuff you can do also through the modifying of the crypto state, which is done to you. So again, TLS 1.3 killed all this using just AEAD ciphers. So all this mostly is valid for the old stuff. Okay, I'm getting slightly out of time. So then again, proper byte checking, you know, for the verified data. So that was a hash basically of the transcript of all messages which flew through the wire, to make sure that your client and your server knew that they were speaking about the same stuff and no one had touched something in transit, right? Again, most of this is killed in TLS 1.3 because the transcript is like peppered all around the derivation of key material, meaning that if anyone has touched a packet, the actual keys derived from there won't be valid anymore. Another one basically is around fragmentation, which is quite interesting because TLS has quite a few quirks around fragmentation. Meaning that the record size, the max record size is 2 to the power 14, which is the guy who's going to transport the data, which can potentially transport a handshake, which that handshake has got a fragmentation boundary, which is 2 to the power 16. So meaning that you can have these weird scenarios where your handshake is going to be fragmented across multiple fragmented records, right? And this kind of is interesting because some intercepting stacks don't scope well with TLS reassembly. And it can allow you to have some interesting scenarios where you can bypass these stacks by playing around with the fragmentation offset, basically, and all this boundary and all this kind of things. And some TLS 1.3 specific stuff. So Rich talked a lot about handling of zero RTT. So that's definitely something that I'd recommend turning off by default. Because of, you know, the guarantees it have. You have to understand very well what it's going to do at the application layer to be able to use this. And your application has to be aware of this, which makes it super tricky, in my view. And there's a bunch of resumption checks you need to take care of, which are covered by the spec, so it's more implementation details specific. Okay, so I'm out of time. So anyway, if you want to try it out, it's on GitHub, it's open source, so just clone it out and use it. You'll have to use master because this is where I put in all the TLS 1.3 codes. And if you want to talk about it or file bugs about it, just file bugs and we'll try and address them on the free time we have, pretty much. Thanks a lot. I don't know if you've got any questions.
I've wanted that for like years.